If you're going to take anything away from what I say, yes, I hate men. You can take that, run with it, enjoy it, because I hear it constantly like, oh, she just hates men. Do you see the name of her podcast? Yes, I fucking hate you all. But,
right.
Too many men.
Oh, that's way too many.
Hey, everybody. My name is Allison Lucan. Welcome back to Too Many Men. I am delighted to be joined by one of the most empathetic people I know, and that is an amazing character trait. We're going to get into that. That is Sarah Sivian. Sarah, how are you this fine Wednesday?
Oh, I'm great. Tired. Won't stop raining in Boston. Just kind of ready for the playoffs, but we'll be getting into that.
All right. And we would not be Too Many Men without, because it's a whole thing, people. This is a lot bigger than one sentence. And we just heard about it. The new sewing machine having even more efficient scrunchie and upcycled materials making. Shayna Gold and Shayna, say hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm ready to get back to work. It's been a week with that sewing. It was a tough one. So I rearranged all my crap and all my jerseys. Now I'm ready. I'm ready. We're going to have sick playoff gear this year.
All right. Perfect. Perfect. Well, if you're enjoying us on our YouTube stream, I will apologize in advance because I am stuffing down lunch while we record on a game day. So enjoy that. That's all the more reason to not watch the YouTube, but here we are. Let's get
really
right to
selling
it.
Ourselves. Great.
We listen.
Just got the YouTube back. Don't watch it. Don't listen to our podcast.
Well, I mean, we are women in hockey, so we're used to these kinds of reactions anyway. But I digress. Sarah, I think, are you separate from the drum today?
I have the drumsticks. I feel like that's been fun on this journey. I have the drum too, but okay, wait, is it time yet?
Sarah, it is time. What time is it?
It is time for... bit of news. I really love doing this.
Continual shout out to at Benny Drawbars for sending us our bit of news drum and drumsticks. If you aren't following him on Instagram, you should, because he posts video of all the amazing songs he covers at Climate Pledge Arena, and it's wonderful. So check that out. But let's get going. We said bit of news. It is time to talk about all kinds of things. Let's start with something that broke almost exactly after we finished recording last episode. But I know for a fact that both Sarah and I at least have very strong feelings on this. And it was announced that the city of Alexandria, which is in Virginia, flat out says no to the Washington Capitals building a new arena and moving out to the suburbs. It sure looks like they are going to have to stay downtown. And I, for one, think that that is the best plan. Just put your money into renovating that building. Sarah, I know you agree. What was your reaction when you saw that this was all just a big political machination anyway?
Yeah, right. Speaking of it, like, I have been obviously always a big fan of Steven Wino. He's covered the Caps for the Associated Press for years. I was reading one of his stories about it, and it was kind of a leverage type thing. Like, they wanted the city to get more money, like whatever it was. They didn't want to have to move to Alexandria. And it's like, why would they? Because it would be such a bad idea. But the fact that they were like threatening it, it's just like, is this a game? Like, I would have hated that so much that it was one of those things where I didn't even want to think about it. Every time I would, it would make me so mad, because that arena is so perfectly central in the most walkable area of DC and already a walkable city. Like, why? Oh, I can't imagine going to DC and wanting to catch a game. And like, it's like, nope, let's take the train, the Met, to Alexandria. Like, I'm not trying to do that. So I'm just relieved.
And you can take the metro into the city to the current arena. It's perfect. If people have not experienced DC traffic, it is a goddamn nightmare, as John Tortorella would probably say. And it is not at all a good idea to make people to go outside the city farther, drive more on game days. Shayna, did you have an opinion anywhere near as strong as Sarah and I did on this whole issue?
I don't think it was as strong, but I'm with both of you. Like, I hated the idea of moving them out of the city. There are so few teams in cities. I think it's just a really cool and unique experience. And like, as someone who nearby, I've had it where it's your more suburban arena versus, you know, one right in the city. Like, there's different perks to each of them. Don't get me wrong. Like, a 20-minute drive to the arena can be really nice, but that just wasn't the reality of it. And like, this is where your fan base is. The heart of DC, that is what makes them unique and special. Why lose it? Especially when it just the location itself is so cool. You can just upgrade an arena. You don't always have to go balls to the wall, build a brand new one. I know everyone's doing it and like that's the hype and stuff and that's cool and wonderful and it can be great. But when you have something in a good location, like you should use and abuse that. I hated every part of this process. It's not surprising. It was just a money grab. Fuck that. Absolutely hate it. And I also hated the stuff, right? It was like the WNBA team was going to stay there.
Yeah.
And the hockey team was going to leave. Like now we don't have any right. of those issues and you know, it feels a lot better.
Like, for example, did you know, this is a fun fact for you, Climate Pledge Arena, where the Kraken play, is both the oldest and newest NHL arena because they renovated
that,
it.
See, it's oh, yeah. so cool. It's yeah. That is so cool. Everything about, see, they have, and that's something special about them too, right? Besides like how you can walk outside of it and you can like see in the arena, like everyone has their own quirks.
Yeah.
And that's exactly. something that makes it stand out. Why wouldn't you want to have your own?
There's just so many factors. But it's like with a Kraken team, you want to do it right if you get this opportunity. And they took the golden opportunity to really, really sell the Kraken in Seattle parts of it, which is awesome. And like, I don't know. It's just, it's different because I get it with expansion. But if something's already working, Capital One Arena always has good attendance. It's like, why are we going out of our way to completely uproot it?
Right. I mean, yeah. again, Unless for sure there are things
in shambles.
You can, there are, look, it is true yeah. that there are things there that need improved and fixed and renovated. That's for sure.
The
true.
Away locker room is atrocious. Oh.
And they've renovated and it's still atrocious. But anyway, I was just there. It's yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to the actual things that happen inside arenas. And that is NHL hockey. We'll start there. We didn't talk about this the first time it happened. But let's talk about the second. For the second time, John Hines pulls his goaltender in OT, which we all learned was a big risk because if you lose, having pulled your goaltender, you don't even get the loser point that you would have gotten because you got to OT. It worked for him the first time, but it did not work for him the second time. And this is a team that definitely needs every single standings point that it can get. And then I think it was Down Goes Brown posted a really compelling question, which is, why are you waiting to pull your goaltender in OT? If you have faith that your team can score with the extra skater, why aren't you just doing it in regulation? Because the net-net is still going to be the same. If you lose in regulation with a pulled goaltender, it's going to be the same outcome as if you lose without a goaltender in OT. I love the chaos of it. I think the strategic question here that we've got now is interesting. Shayna, what do you make of pulling the goaltender in OT? Is it the strategy we should see more of, or did John Hines learn his lesson?
No, I think it's something we should see more of, and we should see how coaches learn from it and evolve with it, and when is the moment to do it. Like the first time against Nashville, if I remember correctly, they had pulled the goalie in regulation to tie the game in the first place and force overtime. And then they did it again in overtime because they really needed those points over the Predators and things were a bit closer then. It made sense the way it happened, right? Because you first had to get to overtime and they did pull the goalie. Were you going to immediately pull it with a few seconds to go? Like that wouldn't have made sense. I understood it and they did it on the fly and it came by surprise. This time was different. I get it. You need the points from Vegas. It's a little different now because Vegas jumped up into third place versus being in the wild card at the time. But it felt like a good risk to take because I understood the idea of getting the points away from Vegas when maybe your focus needs to be LA now, but it's the same difference in case they keep shifting back and forth. But I don't know if that was the moment exactly to do it. I like that he goes for it, though. I like that he's trying something different. It worked for them before. You can take your opponent by surprise, and they're a team that works really well with an empty net. I do wonder how often now are they practicing this? Because I feel like before it wasn't a thing. Like, are you going to work this into your practice routine where you try going 4-on-3 on the power play, and you have on the power play in 3-on-3, and you work on like being better defensively? Like, I don't know.
Teams work on 4-on-3 because of a power play in overtime. And I mean, I'm sure the objective is still
same. But I guess you have to have a different mentality of like, now you can't let the puck clear at all versus it's okay, yeah. Your goalie will get it and you can reset.
So therefore, I ask you, Sarah, this question. Again, a lot of us didn't know this rule existed about the risk of losing the loser point because you've pulled a goaltender. Is the rule itself a good idea, or should it go away? Should you get the loser point even if you lose and you had pulled your goaltender?
Yes. Or what the, are we doing here? Like, why does it matter? A strategy, like however you win or lose, should be you either get the point or you don't. Like, why is a win or a loss contingent and a point contingent on a strategy in the game that is well within the rules? You either make it against the rules or you're allowed to have the loser point. I didn't even know that was a rule. So that's actually pretty crazy. But stay with me here when it comes to the bigger picture. Like, either way, there's a 50-50 chance you're going to win or lose in overtime. Why don't you just try everything, especially in this high stakes situation? It's like, why not optimize these? You only get 5 minutes. Why not do everything you can in these 5 minutes? I don't know. I mean, it is, I think it's so interesting, but I will say, like, yes, it's worked once and it hasn't worked the other time. And it's like, okay, maybe they would have lost the game anyway. So maybe you just try to optimize it. And it is somewhat of a crapshoot, but at the same time, it is a pretty drastic thing.
I like that the point thing. I actually do. I don't know why.
I agree with Sarah.
It's a weird twist. But I want to take it further.
It's fun that it's weird.
I want to raise the stakes further. And Rich brought this up to me right after it. He immediately looks at me. He's like, you got to text Jeff Merrick this idea because he's the only person that'll be on my side. And he goes, I wanted that if you allow the goal while your opponent goes empty net, you don't get a point at all if you allow that goal, which would never fucking happen. But he was like, I want to go further than that. If you can't save that goal while they don't have a goalie in net, no point.
I'm with Sarah. I think Sarah makes a really good point. Like, it can't be different because of one strategic, like, that's like saying, like, if you run a five forward power play and, you know, something happens, like, then you don't get whatever. It's not a legitimate application of the paradigms of the game, in my opinion.
I agree with Shayna, though, that it's interesting and fun and, like, I like the drama. But yeah, it's just like when actual things are at stake, like, that's an interesting bend in the rules.
Well, we will see if more teams take it. I'm curious to see. Let's talk about some other news. And this is a player who not only made it over to the US, but has made his NHL debut. And that is, unfortunately, because of how the team listed him, not the tallest goaltender in NHL history, because he's listed at 6'7 and not 6'8, which some people think he is. But Philadelphia has Ivan Fedotov now with them, and he gets forced into action as the Flyers are clinging on to a playoff spot. And John Tortorella made a very public statement after the game that he makes his debut, that it was the only player that played after the Flyers come back and force overtime only to lose. They're struggling, torting. Shayna, what do you make of what I'm still going to say is the tallest goaltender in NHL history?
I mean, I'm thrilled to see him in the NHL because he's gone through some shit to get here. The way he was put in a game is so intriguing to me because when you look at the Flyers' chances, it kind of rides on Sam Harrison, who has never played a workload like this. And you also have to, it's not just getting to the playoffs. You don't want him burnt by game one. I liked how he was put into the game. I liked what Tord said. He was like, he just didn't look right. So get him on the bench, you can rest him. And why not go for it? You're already behind in the game. And he handled it so well. And then his comments today, I saw, were even better. Like, it was a refreshing take from Torts, everything about it, about how the team mm-hmm. has to play in front of him. And I like that if you throw a goalie in like that, you're kind of raising the bar for everybody else in that moment too, saying like, here's a guy going into his first bit of NHL action, we're trailing in a game, pick up the pace right now to give him support. I liked everything about it.
Sarah, what's your take on Fedotov, Tortsing, and the Flyers?
Yes, I love that Tortsing means so many different things all at once, for good, bad, ugly. Like, the thing is, he lives his life with an edge, and that means he's going to say some things, but he's also, I loved that he had the humility to kind of walk back what he said about the other goalie, right? Now, that's not fair. Like, yes, he's playing poorly, but who thought that kid would be in the position he's in right now. Like, who would have thought this investigation would happen? Then other goaltending stuff happens, and that's your last line. He should basically not, he should maybe be in the ECHL. Like, this situation is not fair to him. So to Torts's point on that, I'm so glad that he apologized publicly, like, about his players. And it was a really interesting discussion today about how he interacts with his players. And the new guy coming in, of course, it's like, that gives the whole team a spark, but it's not even just about vibes at this point. It's about the goaltending that you can even dish out right now. It's not like, well, should they, shouldn't they? It's like, they absolutely have to do something else. So having one of their star prospects come in, it's like, I'm sure he's thrilled to be in the opportunity he is right now. Like, we debate so much about players coming in, but any player will tell you they want to come in right now. They want to play, especially a player that has had this type of situation, right? Like, he's been playing at elite levels for a while. He's ready. Like, there was extenuating circumstances regarding his contract and stuff like that. And he's a big boy. Like, I think he's just, he's ready. Yeah. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah. And good on him for, if you aren't familiar with his story, he had to, they're keeping details very close to the vest of how he actually made it to the US, because he is Russian. And as we all know, there's a lot of political issues over there. And there were accusations related to military service with this player. I'm not clear on the specific wording, so I'm going to steer clear of that. But he makes it over and is able to contribute. And if you haven't seen the video that we're all talking about, I'm sure if you Google it, you'll look for Torts comments on Wednesday, not Thursday or Tuesday, but Wednesday. And as I often did when I covered the man, I implore you to listen to the entire availability, not just the sound clips that people pick out and use for their own purposes. But let's move on to some other on-ice news. Well, this is on-ice and off-ice, because I personally was very happy about this. So Jeff Skinner reaches 1,000 NHL games. He got some really cool gifts from his teammates. Buffalo finds a way to come back and win over the Washington Capitals, that desperately needed those points for the playoff. But most importantly, Lily Collins of Emily in Paris sent him a congratulations video. Sarah, I know you covered this player. You had a really thoughtful comment on everything going on with him last night as he was celebrated for 1,000 games. What's your take on this whole situation?
Yeah, God, he's one of the top active players in goals per game. And he just has kind of faded into the background in 1,000 games, because he goes from the Hurricanes, that he was a homegrown player. And he was like, when they drafted him, it was like the Backstreet Boys is the way everybody describes it to me. Like, he was an absolute star in Raleigh, but they just had this horrible situation with their management. They were so cheap. They didn't want to invest. Like, the team was always two games away from making the playoffs or whatever. And it must've been so heartbreaking. And then the year he gets traded, because they just had to kind of clean house. They have new management that's like, okay, we're going to do things differently here. You have to get rid of the star. You just do it. The Canes immediately make the playoffs. And then he goes to the Sabres, where it's kind of the same situation that was with the Canes, except even more cursed and less like, okay, it's less the Sabres control, because they do try more to make the playoffs, I guess. But it's just, I can't imagine how difficult this is for somebody who has such a great personality. I mean, he's so interesting, the between two stalls, the smile that's always on his face, and he's an elite scorer. But like, could you blame, this is where the human element comes in, where it's like, could you blame him for kind of having, like, not slumps, but not always being the person that's going to make the playoffs for you? Like, he's been really through a lot, and I just hope he gets to see the playoffs at some point. I love that the Sabres kind of went all in for him, because he deserves to be celebrated. He's great vibes. And yeah, the Hurricanes, like, there's rumors that have gone around after he was traded that, like, Rod thought he was lazy or something. Rod loves him. Rod wishes him the best, but it was a situation where it really was like, he was not going to succeed with the Hurricanes. I mean, hopefully the Sabres make it in the playoffs and he succeeds there, but like, it just wasn't, it was Lindholm too. Like, these great players just weren't the correct players for that system. And when they'd been under the environment of Bill Peters for that long, Rod was kind of just like, I need to have a fresh start with people, and he needs a fresh start too. So it wasn't about like Rod was shipping him out or anything. It needed to happen.
Shayna, this again is a player with 1,000 games under his belt. That's not a small accomplishment. That's a big deal. And, you know, to Sarah's points, it looks like this is a player who's continuing to be beloved by fans and by teammates. They got him like a truck or a boat or something, like, and he drove it around on the ice. And if you haven't seen it, the reason the Emily in Paris video is so great is because Jeff Skinner is a fan of Emily in Paris. If you Google that, there's a fantastic video of him telling Alex Tuck to watch Emily in Paris because she gets bangs this season. Shayna, what stands out to you about the player and what you can infer of the person who also met Taylor Swift and tried to give her a signed jersey? What's your favorite thing about this wonderful, wonderful human?
It's everything. I mean, like, he's someone that just seems so enthusiastic about everything he does. Like, the Between Two Stalls was so good. And I loved that they reversed it on him for this, with Tajay and Tuck hosting it for him and trying to, like, embrace his awkwardness in it. Everything about it was so perfect. And you could just see from that alone, like, the enthusiasm his teammates have about him, which I think is the best part about it. And, like, you think about the Ralph Kruger era in Buffalo, and, like, I swear, it was like, did he kick your dog, Ralph, the way that he treated him? Mm-hmm. I never understood it. So the fact that he's hitting 1,000 games after all of that, and the way he bounced back the second, you know, Granato took over and he actually got minutes to play, is so big for him. Like, he's never going to be your game breaker, but he's going to be, you need a complimentary star. You need high-end talent, and he's that. You can, like, argue all day if he's overpaid or the Sabres should or shouldn't have, or they were in the position to, but, like, he's been such a good fit for them as the team grows around him, and I really hope to see him in the playoffs, because you just see someone who brings something that I think that locker room seemed like they needed at the time, right? It's guys like Skinner, it's guys like Okposo, who I think helped bring the group together, and it's helped get them to this point. Now, you know, we'll see what pushes them over the edge next.
Well, hopefully something will, because they've struggled mightily in that area. Let's move on.
Crushed it last night, though.
That's true.
Just for Jeff.
Very exciting, interesting stuff happening in that Women's Worlds starts today, which is Wednesday. You'll be listening to this Thursday. But there's going to be some really great hockey going on. Shayna, you are the premier person at The Athletic who covers the women's game. What can you tell us to look for? And give us top two, because I know you could talk about this all day, top two headlines of what you're looking for at Women's Worlds.
The Sarah Filliere show. We all want to see more of it. We all know she's going to get drafted in the PW, and we're excited to see. I would be shocked if she's not a top two pick. But it's a good way to get to know the players who aren't already in the league and see, you know, how they mesh there. And the other thing is, I'm looking to see who can make a push outside of USA and Canada. That's always the most intriguing part, right? We've seen Sweden get their funding cut and the way that they've battled back from it. We've seen Czechia emerge as a disruptor. We know that Finland can be really good. So, and now you have teams like China and Japan in the group that I think always kind of add a little bit of an edge that you don't expect to see. So it's going to be exciting to see who else, you know, is in the mix. Who is the team that makes Canada and USA think a little bit differently? And, you know, who could jump into a medal spot and shake this up?
And where can people watch? And where are these games being held, so that people know if they have to do any time adjustments?
Games are in Utica. You can watch primarily on NHL Network, because, of course, games that are not on NHL Network are on ESPN Plus. I don't believe it's one or the, I don't think it's ever going to be both. I think it's one or the other. I know Michelle J posted the schedule and in with network. So if you skim back, you can find that.
And maybe we can retweet that from the account, Shayna. If you can find that, you can retweet
yes,
that.
Yes, I will do that right now.
Sarah, what are you looking forward to with Women's Worlds coming back?
Did you see, like, the dogs in Taylor Heisey? Like, there's a picture of her, like, they were all bonding with dogs and the way to de-stress. That's what I love. Gotta check that out. But it's the first time since 2017 that it's on U.S. soil, whatever that means. I'm not a big American patriot, but hopefully the girls, the women, the world pull off a win. It is, like Shayna said, like, you're looking to see the talent that's not already in the league. You know, the scouts will be there trying to see, like, who is going to best fit against the players that are already in the league, right? Like, it's a good opportunity to see. Sometimes you think about goalies in particular, it's like the amount of high tier talent that is in the PW, it's really like the best of the best. So it's really hard to evaluate who's the middle tier, who's the second best of the best, and who actually shouldn't like be belonging in any type of expansion or something. So I think, like, to put it nicely, I don't know. I feel like it's a really good way to use a barometer to see where we're at with the rest of really talented women's players.
Absolutely. So check those out. Wrapping up our Bitto news, just wanted to give a couple shout outs and sending of good energy. Shout out to Josh and Luke Youngren, who run Evolving Hockey, because apparently Kyle Dubas follows them on Twitter and chirped them back. You can go look for that on Twitter. On a more serious note, we would like to offer our support to Ethan Bear, who has entered the player assistance program. As always, we wish for a full and complete and healthy recovery, whatever that requires and however long that takes. And we send our great sympathies to Boone and Maggie Jenner, whose first child was stillborn, and the family is dealing with that unimaginable loss. So we send our thoughts to you. All right, it has been a while, but guess what, guys? We have an entrant. Sarah's just shaking her head. On the shit list. If you were not on Twitter on Tuesday evening, in the midst of what has been, and listen, you guys, I don't even like basketball anymore. I feel like I had too much of it when I was younger. In the midst of what has been a compelling NCAA tournament for the women's side of the game that has so many of us watching it, loving it, learning about these players, or following players that we've loved for a long time, former player Bobby Ryan decided to start tweeting derisively about how no one watches women's sports and everyone's just lying, saying that they are, and it's all a joke. As people started to call him out, what was even more concerning was that for hours, the man kept doubling down, even getting called out by people like insider Chris Johnston and saying, dude, let's just take the L. So this is where Sarah's empathy come in, because I had just about had it. There's no excuse for that for me. We are not making a correlation here, but we do know that this is a player who has battled substance abuse issues in the past. And so questions about that entered this conversation last night. But I just, regardless of this player's situation, it's my opinion that if this is the level to which you go and you commit to continually just shitting on women's sports, whatever they are, that is not okay. And that tells me a lot about the truth of who you are. Sarah, you were following this. You were the one giving this person some grace as a very kind human. What were your thoughts watching this go down, and maybe on the bigger picture of this whole situation?
I don't know. Like you said, it's more harm than good to ever accuse somebody who has had substance abuse struggles or whatever, like any type of mental health, to be like, oh, it's kind of not disrespectful to just them, but as somebody's humanity to accuse, like, let them off the hook for something that they're doing that is unsavory. And the truth is that he's saying things you shouldn't say, no matter what you're going through, and for no reason. Like, he was being an asshole, a dick. Like, the things he was saying and the way he was saying, it was just like he wasn't even arguing about something that meant something to him, right? And the way he was doubling down, it just, I don't know. I guess the empathy comes in. It just reminds me of some people in my life who I know act or speak like that when they're going through something hard. It doesn't give anybody an excuse to do it, but I've just been thinking a lot about the internet lately and the piling on. Like, I don't know. Does it really help? Like, Women's World started today. Let's talk about that. The piling on of the stupid thing. Like, he shouldn't be let off the hook, but at the same time, what does it do to let, he's clearly struggling, no matter how you want to look at it. Like, looking at all of the 24 hours of responses, I'm like a normal, well-adjusted person. And I've had my days where I'm tweeting up a storm where it's like, somebody has called me and it's like, let's calm down. Like, okay, like, are you okay? And I'm like, actually, no, like, there's a lot going on. So, like, just hopefully there's somebody in his life that does that. But at the same time, you have to be held accountable for things that you're clearly posting and doubling and tripling down on. I mean, I did respond to him and I was just kind of like, let's have better takes tomorrow. Let's go to bed. Like, and I don't know, that's kind of infantilizing him. Like, he's an adult and he can say bad takes, but yeah, he was just like, I'm not changing my mind on this. And I was like, all right, well then you're like, being a fucking idiot then, because I don't know, he's coming at Megan Shaika, who's the most like level-headed Honestly. Person in the world. Like, just, it doesn't, nothing gives you an excuse to do that, but it's something I've just really thought about and grappling with, because I don't think it's helpful to anyone to pile on. It's been a while since anybody's piled on me, which means like, wow, maybe I am getting a little better in this life. But at the same time, like, I know how that feels and how it ostracizes you even more, but we don't have to hold his hand when he's being such a dick. So I don't have an answer, but I just don't like how we have to harp on things. What even happened a few weeks ago too, where it was like, okay, the jokes are over now. Like, Andrew Berkshire. It's yeah. like, okay, he said a stupid thing. Like, why the negativity lately is just really like exhausting me. I don't have the mental capacity for it. I need to like log off and try to get a job. Like, I don't know. Like, at the end of the day, these people going around in circles, the internet seems like a worse and worse place every day.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is very important that we keep that underlying how we grapple with people who are putting out really toxic sexist content. And maybe that's the bigger question for us, right? Is that we can't cancel everybody just to cancel them, but what he was saying and how vehemently he was saying it and continuing yeah. to fight for it is not okay. Shayna, what was your thoughts / reaction seeing this all go down?
I'm so tired of men discussing women's sports in such an asshole-ish way. I don't even have a better way to put it. Like, if you're going to take anything away from what I say, yes, I hate men. You can take that, run with it, enjoy it, because I hear it constantly like, oh, she just hates men. Do you see the name of her podcast? Yes, I fucking hate you all. But, right. Like, I'm here it is, quoted for me, Shayna Goldman, I fucking hate men, but I especially hate the men who, I cannot stand when men decide to quiz women about sports. Like, it makes my blood boil. And it's like, can you name 5 players on this team? And then you're trying to do it about a woman watching women's sports. You want to quiz her. I'm sorry, Bobby. Do you know 7 players?
Right.
Like, please stop. You don't need to shit on someone for saying that they're enjoying something when literally we're all captivated. Well, and also, I do not like basketball.
To be clear, like, I say this all the time about hockey. Like, I look at hockey a certain way with an analytics slant. But if you are a fan who just wants to go and drink a beer and have a hot dog and watch hockey and cheer, that's a great way to fan. There is no requirement yeah. for anyone to be a fan and have to know a certain subset of information about any sport.
Yeah, 100%. You can I could not list the entire Iowa team to you, but I can tell you Caitlin Clark is must-watch TV, and going up against Angel Reese is must-watch TV. I don't watch March Madness ever, literally ever. I'm watching this year because I care about it. And the viewership is telling. You don't need to quiz someone on it. It grinds my gears so much. I just couldn't stand the way, like, log off, touch grass, go spend time with your family, do anything, but pick fights with people for no reason. Like, I hope someone can reach out to him and just be like, hey, are you all right? And this isn't the way to go. Because I don't think he's going to come to that conclusion on his own based on everything he said. But it just blew up in a way it didn't have to. And it was so self-inflicted, which just makes it that much worse. Like, there's no reason for it. If you don't like something on the internet, swipe past it.
Scroll past, yeah.
I love it when people shit on my tweets or on my stories. Don't read it. I did not force you to click anything. Do I appreciate the click? Yeah. Do I give a shit if you click out halfway through? No, fuck off. I don't need your slow scroll. That's fine. But you're wasting energy. You're telling me, oh God, I just lost 30 seconds of my life reading this. You're wasting more energy saying something about it. Just move on. You don't have to like everything. Yep. Not everything is catered mm-hmm. to everyone for everything. And I feel like that's the biggest thing with the internet. Like, everyone thinks everything has to, I get it. Like, you have a For You page on Instagram and on Twitter, but like, I mean, on TikTok, but like, guess what? Not everything is actually for you. Just scroll past, save the energy because, mm-hmm. you know, and I get it. There's stuff I'm going to fixate on and like dunk on and be like, oh my God, I hate this and blah, blah, blah. Like, we all do it. But sometimes it's like, was this the thing to waste literally 24 hours of your life on. I just can't see how it was. I don't see how anyone did anything productive there. So I really hope someone was just like, hey, you can rein it in. And he will, someone he'll listen to, someone that cares is like, hey, something's up here.
Well, because and like Sarah said, like he showed his own ass because he's literally calling out Megan Chayka, who's one of the most prominent and knowledgeable women, not just in hockey, but in sports. Like he wasn't calling out some random, like, just because she's beautiful doesn't mean that she's the stereotype and doesn't actually know what the fuck she's talking about, because the stereotype is bullshit anyway. But
you literally couldn't pick a nicer person.
Yes.
Like, it's unreal.
And her response was so graceful and just exposed even more that, like, he has to chill, but though he did the opposite of chill. I don't know, when I think about it and the things that I've gotten involved in and have regretted when it comes to the internet or even like having a few beers and posting, I'm like, okay, well, I know in myself that like I regret doing that, and I know it felt bad or came from a place of just like being angry about the world or about certain things. So it's like, I need, now when I see people do that, not that I never do it anymore, but like I've done it way less. I'm just like, okay, I know this person is probably angry about things that are unrelated. It doesn't mean it's okay to do it, and it means you should get called out and stuff. But like, if we could all just be a little nicer for, like, I don't know, the no reason why he was calling her out. It's just,
we're like, just like, if you don't like something, do what we all do.
Yeah.
There's 50 tweets I could want to go off about, but instead I simply text them to you guys, talk my shit and move on. Like, sometimes you have to do that, and that's perfectly normal and cool, right? Like, who among us doesn't need to do that once in a while? But like, maybe that was the move. Like, send it to your friend and be like, do you think anyone cares about women's sports? Like, okay, great.
What was he even? He's he's arguing that she doesn't care, but then that nobody should care. Like, it was just funny that it was nonsense.
I don't like it. Nobody can.
Like, what do you?
Well, let's stop giving him airtime. Let's move on to some actual NHL hockey and wrap up with some hockey talk. It was interesting. If you heard the comments coming out of Florida after their last game, where their head coach is saying, you all can be worried, but we're not worried. Well, I'm asking you, my fellow friends, Sarah and Shayna, are we worried about either of the Florida teams? Florida, the Panthers, are 2-7-1 in the last 10. And on the flip side, just about an hour away by plane, Tampa Bay, which we all kind of thought was not going to get back into the show this postseason, Tampa Bay 8-1-1 in their last 10. Concernometer or excitometer? Which one of these teams' last 10 games show what they really are and which don't? Sarah?
Kind of both. I mean, the Panthers are about to get 100 points with their next win, 101. So it's like, they're probably bored. Like, at this time of the year, I remember there's been like interviews.
It's like Connor McDavid, we need another league.
Exactly. We need another league. We need another perfect trade deadline. Like, they had their fun, and now they're kind of, they also don't want to get injured before the playoffs. They've done that before, and that has not worked. I think I love Paul Maurice and his quotes. And the last time he said something like this, it was about Matthew Tkachuk, and Matthew Tkachuk went off right after.
Right,
so I think, not to make literally everything about Rod Brind'Amour, but he's like the only coach I really got to know. But he said something like, oh God, I actually forget what I was going to say about that. I just wanted to bring Rod up again. What was it? Okay. Team winning. They're bored. Where else was I going with this? Maybe it'll come back to me. Okay. As it pertains to the Lightning, though, this is kind of who they really are. They know when to turn it on. Always. They've always been this exact team, right? That's like, they don't take into stock every single win or streak, or like, they aren't phased. And then they flip that switch when it's time to go to the playoffs. And it's like, okay, now they're just going to be Tampa Bay Lightning playoff mode. And that's kind of the privilege that they have from all of their hard work paying off like years ago. Now it's kind of, they know when to do it, and it doesn't hurt that Kucherov's on the team.
Shayna, what's your take on the two Florida teams?
Yeah, Florida, it hasn't been a great run the last like 10 games, and there are definitely some 5-on-5 concerns. There's definitely some goaltending concerns. They're not finishing their chances, but it's like, I feel like the goaltending and the shooting is going to work itself out, because unlike last year, they're actually doing a good job converting on their chances. So it's kind of like, all right, this can happen. And I think like the last like two games, you're seeing them pick it up a little bit more. if you're going to have a streak like this, like, honestly, this isn't a bad time to have it. They had some injuries along the way. They lost Barkov for a game or two. They didn't have, I think, Ekblad for a couple games and Tkachuk. So that can happen. But it's going to teach you how to bounce back, which is really important because they've been flying high all season. And, like, I think you need a little bit of adversity to kind of, like, give yourself – you need, like, a little sandpaper in your season. You need something that's going to test you, and you have to figure out how to rebound from it. And I think it's a – it'll give them ideas on, like, how to win in different ways after – and I know they had that Cinderella run last year, and they knew it well, but it's a new season. So you still need that reality check. So I don't think it's a bad thing. As long as they find their way out of it, it'll be totally fine. And if they can stay healthy, because better to err on the side of caution, like you said, Sarah. For Tampa – I mean, it's great for them, considering how many teams are battling out for the playoffs. The standout for me, besides Kucherov, is that Braden Point's now going. Duclair's a great fit. And maybe the most important is Victor Hedman looks great. This last month of hockey for him has been excellent. And he didn't – it was a little iffy of a start. And it makes sense because the defense has been just beaten up over the years because of cap reasons. Losing McDonough totally killed them. The Sergachev injury and then re-injury, like – it's a lot to deal with, and it's him by himself. And they didn't get him nearly enough help at the deadline. I know they brought in Dumba, but, like, you wanted to see them go for, like, a Sean Walker type to get closer to that caliber. So the fact that now he's playing at this level, I think it helps solidify a group that is so reliant on their core. There's just a drop of concern, and that's Vasilevskiy, who has been really inconsistent all year. And I think we can give him the benefit of the doubt at first because he's coming back from a back injury. Who knew how he was going to look? And especially behind that defense. But we also know he's someone, I think their first cup year, he had like an iffy regular season before just steamrolling it in the playoffs. So we know he can turn it on. So if he can still do that, they're in good shape. But I still think, like, despite things starting to come together in front of the net, I don't know if this version of the Lightning is going to be as good if he's not on his game in the playoffs.
100%. 100%. Well, let's take one quick final look at another team. And this is a team out west that honestly I keep talking about, I think a lot of people, including myself, often sleep on in terms of not just how they play, but how they are run and how they are built. And that's the Dallas Stars. The West is becoming quite the little interesting mangle. Vancouver's been on a little bit of a slide. Vegas is surging and looks to be getting healthier and healthier by the day, just beating Vancouver last night. But Dallas is on a 7-game win streak. They have 3 points on any of the other Western teams to feasibly win the West. And they are 1 point behind the getting in the run for the President's Trophy for having the most points in a season. Sarah, how lethal is Dallas? And if you had to pick today, how far do they make it in the playoffs?
Yeah, they're the most complete team in the league by far to me. And I felt this from the beginning, even though they could have added a defenseman. What do they do? Add the perfect defenseman. Like, I mean, I don't know, perfect. They might be exaggerating, but a really good
perfect
defenseman.
For them.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect for them. The West really comes down to there's so many beasts there. And it's like, what? This is where seeding is so, so important. But then, okay, you win the prize of number one seed. And then what do you go against the Golden Knights? Like,
right.
It really is impossible to say. But they... that would be a fun rematch to start things up, wouldn't it? And I think they'd be really excited.
If they start today, if they start today, they would face LA.
Oh, yeah, they're going to torch LA.
Yeah.
I'm over LA. I think the Stars from every angle are the most complete. They have... it's the one... time I'm letting you off the hook for not having a star score. They're all stars because they're the Dallas Stars. But you have the amount of guys that have scored 20 goals is more than anybody in the league by far. You have them coming at you line after line after line. Then you have an amazing top pairing on defense. You've got Otter. When he's good, he's good. You have veterans. You have emerging stars. You have the teens that are like coming up and giving you like a boost of energy. I don't know. I feel like the blend of people is pretty fantastic. Matt Duchene's comeback story, and he might be leading the league in game-winning goals. It's like, I don't know. I like the blend of the team gelling together, and the way they're doing it. I mean, I would like one more star score on the power play, but at the same time, they're so sturdy.
Shayna, how far did the Stars go this season?
That's a good question. They've been my team from the West all, like, they're the team if I had to like predict is going to the final. I've been going to Dallas all year because I like how complete they are. The one thing I'm curious about is how they'll match up to Colorado. And we're going to get like a really great preview of that Sunday. I'm hyped for that game. And we're going to get a preview of it tonight against the Oilers, because I just wonder if speed is going to be the enemy of them at the pace that a team like Colorado can play. Because like you said, like, they're so complete. And I wonder too, like, is Jake Oettinger getting it together? Because he's had a really like up and down season. He's had four straight quality starts. The game against the Canucks, I think he saved like two goals above expected. Like, he was so lights out good what he needed to be, that if this is the start of something good, and he could look like the goalie who was in net for that series against the Flames versus last year against the Kraken, like, that'll be a huge difference maker for them, because they really do have a little of everything. And I like the versatility in their lineup. There's so many adjustments. That defense, that lefty-lefty top pair, they could shake up anytime they want. They could throw Tanev with Heiskanen and throw Harley with Lindell and be like, you know what, we don't want shutdown and two-way. We want two balanced pairs, and we're really going to shelter that third pair. You can do it. They know Wyatt Johnson, who's just killing it this year, can jump up to that first line when they need him. They can shift Pavelski down. Like, it's a little bit of everything. And they've lost in such heartbreaking ways that I wonder how much they can learn from it too. And like, last year there were things like Jamie Benn, you know, keeping it together. Can he do it this year? Can he, you know, everyone keep their cool and power through a little bit better? So I wonder what they learned, because we know a team like Colorado knows that, and we've seen Vegas too, like, they knew what it took too. So I really think this team's built to go far, but it's really gonna suck if somehow, you know, they just get the worst round one matchup, because you want to see them go far. Like, your dream round two is Colorado Dallas, right? And then your dream round three is one of them against Vegas or Edmonton, probably. Like, that to me is like the perfect bracket. But say they end up first and they somehow end up with Nashville, like, that's going to be tough against LA, who they would match up to now. I love it even more because they show you how you can be a shutdown team to defensively while still having offense versus the Kings, who are so one-sided right now. So I love them a lot. I think that they are just, it's like years built to this moment for them. So it feels like they're the one to beat.
Well, we will be watching, of course, friends of the pod, newly anointed the Dallas Stars. All right, my friends, it is the end of March. A new month has begun. So we thank all of you who were along with us for the ride to name some kick-ass women. I had a whole list of people I couldn't even get to. We also conclude our sale of Torts merch to go towards a pet charity Pause in Pennsylvania. Shayna will be doing the accounting of that, and we'll share with you what that is on our next episode. But we return to your regularly scheduled programming with our favorite game, and that is Fuck, Marry, Kill. We are going to revisit a topic that we said we would, to see how we're feeling these days. Sarah, you are going to be first. It is to Fuck, Marry, Kill MVP pick from the league, Nathan MacKinnon, Kucherov, of course, and Connor McDavid. The floor is yours.
I'm killing McDavid. And I know it's not, I read Dan Wes Brown's article today about how he's being kind of underrated right now, because he is literally putting up another like heroic effort in his like points per game at the moment and like what he's doing per game. But it still is such a stiff competition this year that you look at the beginning of his season and he just didn't have it this year. And like, we don't want to overcorrect, right? Like, we don't want to say, oh, we've given it to him so much that we don't want to give it to him this year. But I genuinely, thinking about it, and I will obviously revisit this every week, I'm writing a story about it for Friday. So everybody look at the deep dive I'm doing on Friday morning on bleacherreport.com. But I just objectively think, if these are random people that I don't know and you're like doing a blind rating of them, I'm going to give McDavid points off for the beginning of the season. I'm going to kill Nikita Kucherov. I know we're going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
You killed McDavid.
Oh, they both can die because Nathan MacKinnon needs to win the heart. I'm going to fuck Kucherov because, okay, he is a compelling choice and they are tied for first with points. He has kept the Tampa Bay Lightning, like, in when you think about who is the MVP of your team, which is one of the interpretations of this trophy. Obviously, Kucherov is miles away the star of Tampa Bay right now. He's having this season that has definitely kept them in to be where they are right now. But the power play goals, the power play assists, it's too much for me. I know I like even strength when it comes to these kinds of battles. I like not plus minus, but I do like Corsi. I like Zona. I like really diving into this stuff and all around game. And I just, how do you watch Nathan MacKinnon night in and night out and his attitude and not vote him for the Hart? I mean, I will understand anybody voting for any of these three people, to be quite frank with you. But the way I see it, the way MacKinnon takes over games, the way the season started, how it did, and he took the mic and he's like, everybody needs to get better. Like, he created this culture on the Avs and they stepped up for him. He point per game at home until recently, but the 5-on-5, the possession metrics are just so elite and insane. And I just love watching him play.
Shayna, at the risk of drawing ire, if you don't agree, what are your picks?
Okay. My picks are actually the same. I'm so torn on this. I'm going to just hit my window, probably branch. It's like 60 mile per hour gusts today. We're fine. It's whatever. Mika, please. Just woke up and did stretching at the window, like ready to go. Okay.
She woke up and said, we need Panarin Hart conversation.
This is the thing. She's like, we have Panarin in the mix, who's not going to get appreciation. We have Pastrnak. We have Hellebuyck. There's so many players. If the Penguins make it, Sidney Crosby deserves it every day of the week too. It is such a deep field this year. I love it so much. It reminds me of like a couple years ago, we were talking about Shesterkin versus Matthews, and I think it was McDavid too. And it was such a tight conversation. Like, it makes it more interesting. And like, I'm writing about this at the end of the year, the Art Ross versus the Hart. And I literally can't wait because the pool of players is so exciting. I have to kill McDavid as a process of elimination. I don't care that he's not scoring goals. To me, it kind of reminds me of Eichel in the playoffs last year. Marchessault got a lot of the hype and deservedly so, but Eichel was just quarterbacking every play with his puck movement, and that's what McDavid's doing, and it's unbelievable. But what Kucherov and MacKinnon are doing, I feel like, gives them a slight edge. I'll kill Kucherov very hesitantly because I think he's been amazing. The difference of 5-on-5 in his minutes of what the Lightning do versus anybody else, especially with Stamkos's defensive struggles, is unreal. But I have to marry MacKinnon. It's tough because when you look at Kucherov, he plays in a smart way versus MacKinnon's just forceful dominance that's totally different. I feel like one's going to draw your attention more than the other, and it's just, there's nothing you can do about it. But MacKinnon's just, the way that they've been coming back from games lately, and he's been leading the charge with that, will give him the edge for me right now.
Wait a minute. So you don't fully agree? Because you're killing...
No, I'm killing McDavid. I'm fucking Kucherov and I'm marrying...
Oh, I thought you said you were killing MacKinnon. Kucherov. Okay. All right.
No, never. I could not. I love him. I love his game. He's one of the smartest players in the league, and I want to talk about him all day.
He doesn't get enough hype, honestly. Like, that's why I hate that I'm killing him, but it's MacKinnon for me.
Well, you didn't kill... Oh, yeah, you did.
I hope one wins the scoring trophy and one gets the Hart.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not gonna ruffle any feathers with this, with given the passion that we have here. Hi, Mom. How are you?
Mom, they're saying hi to you on the podcast.
So cute. We love her. Doing great things with her day, teaching small children and making them better humans. All right. I'm going to agree because I don't want you two to be mad at me, but I the more I think about it too, I the point that stands out for me that's a differentiator is that MacKinnon is, at least from what we can see, contributing significantly off the ice as well, to the point of his comments at the start of the season. And I totally agree that Connor McDavid's start, whether it is or is not because he was injured, has to matter. It just has to matter. That's just the way it is. So I'm going to go with MacKinnon too, because it's also goals and we love that. So All right, my friends, that will do it for us for this episode. We appreciate you all so much hanging around, listening to us, connecting with us on social. If you haven't already, why not? We're on Twitter and on Instagram at 2_much_man. If you want to represent us when you're not online, you can get shirts, t-shirts, hats, glassware, switch cases that say Too Many Men at toomanymenmerch.com. And until we speak again, we ask you all please to do something, no matter how big or small, to make sure that hockey truly is for everyone. We will talk to you soon.
Love you.
Bye.